Hey everybody, before we start the show, I just wanted to let you know that on Sunday, March 5th, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., the Local Environmental Action Conference will happen in the Curry Center of Northeastern University. The conference is co-sponsored by the Massachusetts Climate Action Network and the Toxic Action Center. It's a great way to meet fellow activists and to learn new stuff. The prices are good, but the early bird pricing will end on February 15th, so you gotta hurry. You can get to the link on the MCAN homepage, the event page, or you can go to localenvironmentalaction.org, all one word. See you there.
Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net. or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of February 3rd, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome aboard. So, D.R., the firework finale, the 4th of July fireworks of the Trump presidency continued for a second week of just all kinds of crazy stuff. We cannot deal with all of it, but there is one very important topic that has come up in the last few days, and I will kind of lay out the chess pieces, DR, and you can discuss what it is. But people should remember that from a climate perspective, President Obama proposed something called the Clean Power Plan, which was intended basically as the EPA's responsibility to make a plan to help the United States satisfy the Paris Accord, cut our greenhouse gases, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the plan. A regulation under the Clean Air Act enacted by the EPA was immediately attacked by the orcs on the other side. Mm-hmm. And the case has ended up at the Supreme Court, bottlenecked at the Supreme Court. In the midst of all that, Antonin Scalia kick the proverbial bucket, and we've waited a year for the Senate to take action on Mr. Garland, but now we're in a circumstance where the Supreme Court is going to make an enormously consequential decision about the Clean Power Plan, the EPA's Clean Power Plan. In walks our bad hair day president. So tell me, what happened this week vis-a-vis the Supreme Court and the Clean Power Plan?
Well, Mr. Trump nominated for the seat that was kidnapped from a former President Barack Obama, a fellow by the name of Neil Gorsuch, who for the past decade has been a judge on the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals based out of Colorado. He's 49 years old. He's the son of the highly controversial former EPA administrator Ann Gorsuch Burford, who was famously forced out of the EPA in 1983 amid scandal after scandal after scandal. And Mr. Gorsuch is 49 years old, which means if he is confirmed, if he's not filibustered by Democratic senators, he could be on the court for about 30 to 40 years. And you know, people should keep in mind when judges are appointed at this youthful age, he would be the youngest appointee to the Supreme Court since Clarence Thomas, who was 40, who I believe was 43 when he was put on the court. And we've seen how long he's gone.
I mean, I did the arithmetic. If this guy is going to be on there for 30 years, that would put him making rulings in the year 2047. And if he stayed on for 40 years, he'd be there in 2057. So it is a consequential circumstance, yes. So continue. So what do you think?
It's a very, very... As you might imagine, this is a very controversial selection. Of course, considering who nominated him to the bench, it would be controversial. And of course, the idea here that, you know, why would those who were horrified by the kidnapping of the seat after Scalia died turn around and sort of say, hey, let's give him a thumbs up? I mean, that's a major point of controversy. And of course, this Mr. Gorsuch's views of law and regulation are also sort of disturbing in the sense that he is an opponent of what is known as the Chevron doctrine. That goes back to a 1984 case, I believe it's called Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council. The Chevron doctrine is best summarized, as Think Progress notes, is that the court in the Chevron case agencies, regulatory agencies like, say, the EPA, know more than the courts about what they regulate, and courts should defer to the agency's interpretation of laws in the rulemaking process, unquote. Ian Millhiser was on Democracy Now! This week and noted that because Gorsuch opposes the Chevron doctrine, and because Gorsuch would likely make rulings cutting down the Chevron doctrine and put more power into the hands of judges than the hands of those who run regulatory agencies, in the event you had a president who took environmental protection seriously, that president and his appointees to the EPA, for example, would essentially not be able to formulate any sort of environmental regulations, because the courts would effectively take that power away from the EPA administrator in that case.
Right. I think that this whole question of, let me just try and restate, DR, what you said very effectively, but the whole question of the President Obama's Clean Power Plan is an interpretation of the law, of the Clean Air Act. The EPA has interpreted it, said this is what the Clean Air Act means for carbon pollution, which the EPA is mandated to address. So the EPA has made this rule, put it out there. And in the past, as you said, according to the Chevron doctrine that the Supreme Court has made for itself, the Supreme Court says the EPA knows more about this than the Supreme Court does. If the EPA says this is what it ought to be, then that stands. And this Mr. Gorsuch seems to not like that very much, right? Mm-hmm. He does not accept the idea that the courts should defer to the regulating agency. And that's a threat not only to the Clean Power Plan, but as you said, for the next 40 years, right?
Exactly.
Because every regulation that comes down, if Mr. Gorsuch doesn't like it, he can say, hey, for some reason that's unconstitutional. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that is a serious threat to climate hawks. The question comes: can it be turned back into a threat to Mr. Gorsuch? I guess the other sort of philosophical thing that this guy brings to the Supreme Court, and correct me if I'm wrong, DR, but I think he is in this school of thought that's called the originalist school of thought, right? Mm-hmm. Where, and this is, of course, what Antonin Scalia was, right? An originalist in the sense that the founding fathers wrote this document and it means what it means and nothing beyond what it means, and that you should not extend it in any way whatsoever. And I guess, the counter argument, of course, to the 30s and what, 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, things like radio and TV were never contemplated by the founding fathers, right? Mm-hmm. So the Supreme Court tried to find a way within the Constitution to regulate at a national level the airwaves, right? Mm-hmm. Because it'd be insane for every state to have its own FCC, right? If Massachusetts was broadcasting on the same radio frequency as the people in Rhode Island, we'd all be hearing nothing. But the originalists deny that as a legitimacy of the federal government to do those things. And of course, the Clean Power Plan is nothing if not a national effort to control pollution across different states, right? So second reason this guy is a threat to the Clean Power Plan.
Mm-hmm. It's a belief that the government should in effect do nothing.
I mean, you hear people talk about the 10th Amendment, which basically says it codifies the idea that anything that's not explicitly given to the federal government is left to the states, right? Which, of course, okay, on the face of it, it says what it says, but it is also a prescription for disaster because you now can't deal with new issues that come up.
Exactly.
So Mr. Gorsuch, by all accounts, is a very smart guy, they said. And I guess one of the points I wanted to make, because I think progressives need to formulate a set of arguments as to why Mr. Gorsuch should not be on the Supreme Court. Given the circumstances, what we have to do. I think the first thing all the news media said was, oh, Gorsuch is brilliant. He's a congenial guy. He writes great opinions. And I guess I want to discount that, because if you're not brilliant, you shouldn't be allowed on the Supreme Court, right? Being brilliant is sort of the zeroth order threshold to get on the Supreme Court, because if you're not brilliant, go get someone who is. So
remember that line from the late Senator Roman Rushko, who defended one of Nixon's nominees who was ultimately rejected. Don't mediocre people need representation on the Supreme Court too?
Exactly. Right. So the idea that this guy is so smart is, I don't think, matters. It doesn't matter at all. The question is, what is he so brilliant about? The question is, what does he believe? And what is he going to apply that brilliance to? What shall we say, destructive legal documents is he going to turn his inquisitive mind to? And we can already see, I mean, aside from questions like Roe v. Wade and, there's tons of questions, right? Not the least of which being Citizens United. From my understanding, the guy is kind of a corporatist who believes that corporations are people, in fact, more people than people, and that they have all these rights, et cetera, et cetera. So when you start stacking up what the guy believes, it doesn't at all comport with what my feeling is what a Supreme Court justice ought to be. And that raises the following question, DR, that I'll answer, and then I'll let you take a crack at. Question is, what does an ideal Supreme Court justice, what are the characteristics that person that you look for? Right? Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that the characteristic is to be able to approach an issue with an open mind, with the intent of helping the largest number of people, because right in the Constitution it says to promote the general welfare. Right, to help people, to help real people, and not to carry out an ideological agenda other than the protection of freedoms enshrined in the Constitution. And it seems to me that what we have now, somebody on TV last night saying there's the conservative push is an agenda-driven push. I mean, you've got four now, potentially five guys on the Supreme Court who have an agenda, right? They want to see that. And they will twist the Constitution to make that agenda happen. Right? Mm-hmm. So I see that is a bad Supreme Court justice on the face of it. So you tell me, DR, does that make sense? What do you look for? I mean, sort of what are the personal and legal qualifications that you look for in a guy, a person, I say a guy, but I mean a person who would be on the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, ideally you would want to have somebody who takes into account the real-world implications of the rulings he or she makes. And the reason I bring that up is that one of the more notorious rulings, it was a dissent. The ruling was okay, but the dissent was really disturbing. A case that occurred in 2009 known as Safford versus Redding. This involved the strip search of a 13-year-old girl in Arizona who was falsely accused by her classmates of dealing prescription drugs, prescription painkillers in the school. And in the dissent, Clarence Thomas wrote a decision where he basically said, hey, that's just fine, because the school official who was doing the strip search was essentially acting as though they were a parent. So it was just okay to strip search a 13-year-old girl. So in other words, if the other eight justices had viewed this case the way Thomas viewed it, it would have been, in essence, illegal for school officials, even potentially perverted school officials, to basically strip search kids, underage kids, left and right. So when Thomas wrote that dissent, he was blithely ignorant of the real world implications of what he was trying to say. So what you ideally would have is a justice who would recognize the real world implications of their rulings. And obviously with regard to this issue, you know, the real world implications, the end of the world implications of a bad decision are fairly obvious.
That's an interesting point. People, so was it Sandra Day O'Connor was so good, even though she was conservative leaning, that she'd actually been an elected official and kind of knew what fell out of these rulings. That's a good point.
And of course, O'Connor famously regretted the real-world implications of her decision in the Bush v. Gore case.
Oh, really?
Whereas Scalia did not, and Scalia basically told people who didn't like the case to get over it.
Well, so let me... So here's my argument for why... I'm not sure his first name. What's his first name? Gorsuch. John Gorsuch, right?
Neil Gorsuch.
Neil Gorsuch. Oh, somebody said this would be the first Neil on the Supreme Court in American history. Neil Gorsuch. Okay, why he should not be on the Supreme Court. Here, my argument is that, number one, he is out of the mainstream of what the United States Supreme Court needs, what the people, the majority of the people who voted against Donald Trump, what they want in a Supreme Court justice. He's not, you know, we don't want Citizens United. We don't want a corporatist agenda. We don't want narrow, stringent, originalist interpretations of the Constitution. Okay, that's the first thing. The second important point to keep in mind, from my perspective, is that Mr. Gorsuch's nomination is what you might call the fruit of a poison tree. Right? Charles Blow had a great article in the New York Times this morning, but basically, Donald Trump is illegitimate, right? He is president. Well, he lost the popular vote. He narrowly won the Electoral College, but because of Putin and James Comey, right? So his legitimacy to make profound decisions is limited. And the idea that he should make a decision of such enormous consequence for the next 30 years to have this very conservative juror on the court is not... It's not right. It's not an American. I mean, you know, power may rule here, but it's not. So he's the fruit of a poison tree. The third thing is that the Senate broke the nomination process with the Garland denial, and that the Senate and the President of the United States need to turn around and renominate Mr. Garland and do the right thing, because that was a miscarriage of justice. And it's important to me because the. You know, the whole Constitution is about process, right? It is about how we make decisions, not what the decision should be, but how we make the decisions. And the Senate Republicans have broken that process, and we may talk later about the approval of some of these cabinet guys who they just suspended the rules, which means they broke the rules in order to get them through. And finally, if the Democrats need to push these arguments right to the wall, because the nuclear option, right, where they say, okay, we're not going to filibuster for the Senate will not allow a filibuster for Supreme Court nominations, and they can get this guy in with 51 votes. Fine. We need to make them do that, because in my mind, if Democrats roll over and say, okay, Mr. Gorsuch can get on the court, we'll save our big fight for the next guy, which really weighs the balance against a progressive vision. And then we fight. I mean, I don't agree. I mean, then they use the nuclear option, they get their second guy. I think the battle needs to be fought now. It's not going to get any easier as time goes by. So tell me, are those good, bad, or indifferent arguments?
No. I agree. And it will be interesting to see if there will be enough. Number one, if there will be enough Democratic senators to sustain a filibuster. Number two, if Mitch McConnell eliminates the filibuster. And number three, if we will see Gorsuch even potentially fail to get, you know, to clear a 51 vote margin, obviously, with all the stories about, you know, certain Republicans being skeptical about voting to confirm Betsy DeVos as an education secretary. Will we see certain Republicans get skeptical about voting to confirm this guy because of a backlash from the public? Remember, when even though Thomas was confirmed, there were two Republicans who voted against Thomas. One, ironically enough, was Bob Packwood of Oregon, who later had his own sexual harassment issues. And the other one was Jim Jeffords of Vermont, who later left the Republican Party years later. And I believe when Robert Bork was voted down 30 years ago, I believe there were also some Republicans who also joined Democrats in voting against him. So it'll be interesting to see if there will be enough of a backlash being fomented in the public with all these marches, all these women's marches and what have you, if that is of such a broad nature that it ultimately results in Gorsuch not getting on the court and him becoming the Bork of our time in terms of, you know, being heavily promoted and then failing to get confirmation.
Right. So we gotta close, DR, but you make a good point. This is the time to call your senator. People in Massachusetts, I think both Markey and Warren have said they're going to oppose Gorsuch. I guess I can't confirm that, but I think that's where they're heading. But no matter what state you live in, call up your senator, because that's what they respond to. Anyway, DR, we'll put up links to some of the stuff we've talked about here at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find the podcast on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can click through to the blog and thence to the SoundCloud page to listen to things. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other directories, right? You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.